Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to MISC's Q2 FY 2022 analyst briefing conference call. Azmir from MISC Investor Relations team will run through the agenda for today's briefing. Azmir, over to you.
Thank you, Diana. Very good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for participating in our second quarter financial year 2022 analyst briefing. We have with us today Encik Zahid Osman, Vice President, Corporate Planning, Encik Raja Azlan Shah, Vice President, Finance, Encik Yassin Halimi, Head of Financial Reporting, Governance and Budget from Finance, Mr. Vincent Ng, General Manager, Corporate Planning. Before we start with the presentation, I would like to bring your attention to the disclaimer slide. During the presentation, we may make some forward-looking statements in reference to our plans and expectations, whereby actual results could differ due to unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that are, in many cases, beyond MISC's control. We will now proceed with the presentation on financial highlights for the quarter performance, which will be presented by Encik Yassin, followed by market outlook and business update by Mr. Vincent. At the end of the presentation, we will open the line for Q&A session. Our event manager will later provide instructions on the Q&A process. With that, I pass the session to Encik Yassin for our first agenda, the update on MISC's second quarter financial year 2022 financial performance. Encik Yassin, over to you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Azmir. Thank you to the participants for joining MISC Berhad quarter two financial year and 2022 analyst briefing. First of all, I would like to bring your attention to page three of our EBITDA. Higher revenue for the quarter, mainly due to the higher revenue contributed from the petroleum segment as a result of higher freight rates from the mid-size tankers. Also, higher construction revenue from the conversion of an FPSO. Lower profit before tax from operations during the quarter, mainly due to the lower profit before tax from the offshore segment due to the increase in total construction costs for the FPSO due to global supply chain issues and China lockdown impact. However, this negative contribution was offset by a positive contribution, i.e., higher profit before tax from operations from petroleum segment due to the higher freight rates as mentioned above. In this quarter, in the non-recurring item, there's an impairment losses for the non-current assets being captured as at this quarter. Moving on to page four of our EBITDA. Higher revenue for the quarter coming from higher revenue from petroleum segment, mainly due to higher blended TCE rate in the mid-size tanker segment. Higher revenue also coming from the offshore segment due to the recognition of construction revenue for the FPSO unit. Revenue also contributed a positive from the heavy engineering segment, mainly due to the higher activities for ongoing heavy engineering projects and higher dry docking activities in the current quarter. Higher revenue also can be seen from the gas segment due to the higher earning days as a result of lower dry docking in the current quarter. Moving on to lower profit before tax from operations during the quarter. Lower profit mainly coming from the offshore segment due to the increase in total construction costs due to global supply chain issues and China lockdown impact, which impacting the FPSO project that we have currently. This lower profit before tax from operations offset by the higher profit before tax from operations from heavy engineering segment due to the higher revenue during the quarter as mentioned above, as well as a reversal of warranty provision for post-delivery projects in the current quarter. At the same time, higher profit before tax from the operations also increased from the gas segment due to the higher earning days as mentioned in the revenue section earlier. Moving on to page five for cash flow and profit before tax from operations snapshot. Our cash flow from operations show a lower balance compared to preceding quarter, mainly due to the operational expenses that we incurred in the current quarter. Whereas higher CFO as compared to the corresponding quarter was higher due to the collection that we received from our clients. Moving on to page seven, cash and debt balances. Our cash balance as at 30th June 2022 remains healthy at a closing balance of about $1.9 billion. cash and debt balances decreased in quarter one 2022, mainly due to the prepayment of loans that we have made for the offshore segment. However, cash and debt balances increased in quarter two 2022, mainly coming from the recent US dollar 1 billion bond issuance that we had recently. Now we are looking at the financial performance by business segments. On page 9, for gas and asset solutions, our revenue that we can see fluctuate because of the dry docking days I mentioned earlier. However, I would like to bring the attention to the impairment that we capture in this current quarter. This impairment mainly due to the asset that we do an impairment assessment as a result of the asset new contract expiry. This impairment also was done based on the market valuation, which taking into account the implementation of stricter environmental regulations as well as technological advancements, which in this case ESI and CII. As we all know, impairment is not new to MIC. It was done on a regular basis for the accounting standard. So normally the drop in market value is market driven, and we also can see from the peers that they are also reporting impairments in their accounts. And we would like just to emphasize that this is purely an accounting treatment. So most of the assets are actually close to the end of their useful life, whereby mostly we fully recover the capital investment during the contract period. So understanding that, for the asset that approaching expiry, we normally find alternatives to repurpose the asset, and at the same time we also negotiate with the client for potential extension. On page 10, for petroleum and product shipping segment, our higher revenue as compared to preceding and corresponding quarter mainly due to the higher TCE rates for mid-sized tankers. The profit before tax as compared to preceding quarter also higher due to the blended TCE as mentioned above. As for the comparison against corresponding quarter, in the previous corresponding quarter there was an one-off compensation that we received from a contract negotiation with our client. On page 11, for offshore business segment, a higher revenue that you can see here compared to preceding and corresponding quarter mainly due to the revenue recognition as the project progress every quarter. I would like also to bring attention to the loss that we have in this current quarter, mainly coming from the current situation with this COVID-19 pandemic, which has been prevalent for the past 2 years, and which some countries have now started to ease the restrictions. However, because of our project is in China, China is still under the strict lockdown as of quarter 2, 2022. Furthermore, Ukraine and Russia war, along with the worsening global supply chain issues, have also impacted the project program and similarly affected several other project conversions in China. So with the above situation, we revisited our project situation, and this quarter we have incorporated the latest additional delays as well as booked in additional provision in cost, which has resulted in negative accounting adjustments, which finally impact the construction profit recognized during the quarter. To manage these challenges, we are actually looking at a few things. First, we are coordinating with various parties to address and overcome the movement restriction in China to minimize the impact of progress delays. We are also working with suppliers to minimize the impact on project schedule. And at the same time, we are also monitoring China's easing of the COVID-19 restrictions. Finally, despite these challenges, the overall project is still profitable. We will continue to closely monitor the cost, but believe whatever provision that we have at this quarter are adequate for the time being. Finally, in the last segment on page 12 for marine and heavy engineering, lower revenue recorded compared to 15% mainly due to lower revenue from ongoing projects and offset by the higher revenue from dry docking activities. But for the profit before tax from operation as compared to preceding and corresponding quarter, the increase is because of the reversal of cost provision for post-sale away projects and higher dry dock activities in the marine segment during the quarter. Thank you. But for now, I hand over to Vincent for the macro environment and business update.
Thank you, Aislinn. Good evening, everyone. Turn with me to page 14, where we have the LNG shipping market rate. And just draw your attention to the blue color line, which is the spot rate for shipping. Historically, the second quarter of the year is usually the low season for LNG shipping, but this year has been exceptionally strong, with a rising 82% quarter on quarter. This has been driven by very high demand for LNG cargo, especially from the European Union, as well as the restocking of gas for the upcoming winter in the Northern Hemisphere. As you may have read, the EU is aiming to get through the coming winter with more LNG imports to replace Russian piped gas. Time charter rates are also continued to rise due to some of the charterers taking on term charter positions to cover for geopolitical uncertainties. Going to the page 15, this is on the supply side. You will notice that the deliveries of LNG fleets or LNG carriers will be relatively low this year. However, it would continue to rise and reach a new peak in 2024 of 75 vessels. A record 78 vessels have been ordered in the first half of this year compared to only 23 in the corresponding quarter in 2021. The global LNG market has been very tight due to lack of new supplies and reduced investments in recent years, with most major producers operating close to full capacity. Given the positive outlook for LNG, this is expected to result in accelerated sanctioning of planned LNG export projects, which will in turn create demand for new LNG carriers. For example, in this year alone, in the last few months, we have had several major sanctions of projects in the U.S. Plaquemines LNG in Louisiana has achieved FID for 13 million tons per annum, and the Corpus Christi expansion project in by Cheniere Energy has also reached FID. This has 10 million tons per annum. For the rest of the year, we expect even more projects to be approved or sanctioned, including potentially Qatar North Field South and some other North American projects. Such projects will provide new growth opportunities for our MIIT gas segment. Turning now to petroleum shipping on page 16. This has been a mixed fortune for our petroleum fleet. On the one hand, VLCC market has remained in the doldrums with reduced oil demand from China due to the zero COVID policy lockdowns, and also changes in trade routes arising from the Ukraine war that has favored mid-sized tankers over VLCCs. As for, on the other hand, you see that for the mid-sized tankers, Suezmax and Aframaxes, the rates have been very strong during the second quarter. As you know, Europe has shunned Russian oil, which has then been diverted to China and India, leading to higher ton-mile demand for mid-sized tankers. This shift is expected to continue as EU has decided to ban most Russian oil imports by the end of 2022. In the near term, the demand outlook for tankers seems positive with continued recovery in global oil demand and supply, particularly due to the some recent easing of China lockdowns and the gradual increase of OPEC Plus oil production, and as well as by the shifting in the trade lanes leading to longer haul routes. However, this is tempered by downside risk of inflation and economic slowdown. Turning to the supply side of the tanker market on page 17, 2022 will see a relatively high volume of deliveries compared to the last 2 years, while demolition activity has been low so far. However, if you look forward, you can see that the fleet growth will be slow going forward, as the order book is currently at a historic low. In this year alone, new orders have remained very low amid high new building prices, lack of yard space, prevailing tonnage oversupply, as well as uncertainty over environmental regulations. In the medium term, we expect that there will be gradual demand recovery coupled with slow fleet growth that would support improvements in market conditions. In the meantime, our petroleum unit will continue to build a long-term secure income, primarily through our DPSP fleet, and rejuvenation of the fleet, especially for LNG dual fuel vessels. Moving on to the next segment, which is offshore. With the prevailing elevated oil prices and the return of the energy security agenda to the forefront, this is expected to create a surge in upstream capital investment over the next 5 years. The global offshore E&P capex spending is expected to increase 20% in 2022 compared to 2021, with Latin America and Asia Pacific accounting for nearly half of the total. Demand for FPSOs is expected to remain good, with increasing awards over the next few years, most of which will be in South America, particularly in Brazil and Guyana. That covers the market environment. I shall now take you through the business update. Firstly, on the gas business, you would have read that we have recently announced that the MIC, together with its consortium partners, NYK, K-Line and China LNG, have been awarded long-term charters by Qatar Energy for 7 new-built LNG carriers to be built by Hyundai Heavy Industries. Each consortium member holds 25% stake in this venture, and these LNGCs will be delivered starting from 2025. Going to page 21, the portfolio mix for the petroleum segment is currently 72-28 term to spot for the second quarter, an increase from the first quarter 65-35 ratio. In the second quarter, our petroleum segment took delivery of 3 vessels, 1 LNG dual fuel VLCC for Total Energy, 2 DPSCs for Shell and Petrobras respectively. We turning to the next page, we also sold 1 FMX in the second quarter, and subsequent to the quarter in July, we took delivery of another DPSC for Petrobras. So all in all, for the year, we have AG has taken 8 deliveries, 6 DPSCs and 2 dual fuel VLCCs. This brings AET's DPSC fleet to a total of 17 vessels, making us one of the top DPSC players in the world. On the offshore side, we continue to be focused on the execution of Mero 3 project, as Jesslyn has updated just now. Moving on finally to heavy engineering. During the quarter, the marine business completed repair and maintenance of 28 vessels. The order book backlog as of June is 1.7 billion ringgit, while approximately 18 to 19 billion ringgit worth of heavy engineering tenders have been submitted as of end of June. I think that wraps it up for my presentation, and I now hand you back to Hasmin.
Thank you, Ashlyn and Vincent, for the presentation on the financial performance and business update. With the completion of the presentation, I would now like to hand over the call to the event manager who will guide and manage the Q&A session. Diana, over to you. Diana?
Hi, can anybody hear me?
Yep, can.
Okay, thank you, Asmir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Participants with questions to pose, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and you'll be placed in the queue. To cancel the queue, please press 02. Please state your name and company you represent before asking your questions. Participants with questions to pose, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. Okay. I have got Stephen on Canada for the first question. Please go ahead, Stephen.
Hello. Hi. Hope you guys can hear me. Stephen here from Canada. Thanks for the briefing, yeah. I have a couple of questions. I'll just ask them one by one. I'm not sure if this was mentioned earlier in the briefing or I probably missed it. But I would like to know what is the reason for the quarter-on-quarter drop in the gas and asset solution core profit, right? I think quarter-on-quarter on the revenue is actually largely flattish, but there was actually a drop in the core profit. Just want to know what is the reason for this.
Okay, Stephen, thank you for your question. This is Azlan here. Insofar as the gas solution, you are referring to the Bursa announcement or to the slides that were presented to you?
Both also similarly quarter on quarter earnings drop, but the revenue is largely flattish.
I see. Yeah, I mean, in the slide that was presented to you, you know, we included the impairment
as
part of the PBT, the blue color line, yeah?
Yeah,
yeah. But if you look at the Bursa announcement, for the gas unit, the profit has actually gone up, if you look at the core operating profit. Nah.
For your slides, even if I reverse the impairments, right, it still shows a quarter-to-quarter drop.
A slight drop, like, we add on back the impairment, there's a drop of about 20 million or so, right? 15 to 20 million now.
Yep.
Yeah, those would be because of dry docking days in the current quarter.
Okay. Those would be dry docking data. And another question is on your petroleum segment. You mentioned that year-on-year drop because last year there was recognition of a one-off gain, isn't it? Just wondering what that amount is.
It was about 40 to 45 million USD. There was a one-off payment made in the corresponding quarter last year.
Okay, 45 million USD. Yeah. My following question is actually regarding your impairments. Yeah. I think you've mentioned earlier that the impairments were mainly done on the LNG vessels because of the assets being near contract expiry. If I didn't recall wrongly, back during our engagement session with the CEO, there was a mention of actually impairments on your offshore business site because of the cost delays by Mero 3. Just wondering, why is that not recognized this quarter as per guidance?
No, those are not classified as impairment. Those are captured as part of the operations, you see. So we have captured the losses or the cost overrun and the delay impact in the operating line. Those are already taken up.
So those
we, go ahead,
those
go ahead.
Is already reflected already in your reported number. It won't come off as provisions or impairments now.
No, it isn't. Because in the offshore segment, most of these are finance fees receivable. So there's hardly any impairment on that.
Okay, understood. And my last question is, as what I understand, I think for the next couple of years, until at least 2025, there is about more than 10 LNG carrier vessels nearing contract expiration. I'm just wondering, what are the plans for these carrier vessels? Are they being able to be redeployed? And if so, what sort of capex is required to you know, refurbish these vessels for redeployment?
Yeah, I mean, with these vessels, there's basically two core strategies that we are employing. Number one, we'll be trying to repurpose these vessels to floating storage or floating regas, FSU or FSRU. Right, so in fact, given the Ukraine war, the demand for such units have suddenly increased. And we are currently working on one or two potential opportunities for these vessels. At the same time, we are also negotiating with the clients for potential extension for some of these things, you know, because the client still needs these vessels to serve the molecules. So those are currently, you know, ongoing discussions.
Okay, okay. If we deploy the vessels in, let's say, in a more shorter term market, let's say a 3-year charter rate, a 3-year charter contract, or let's say even in the spot market, is that a viable strategy you guys are pursuing?
Yeah, I mean, the current market, I mean, it's not, in recent months, the market has come down. And we will need to take a look at what exactly is the additional investment required, you know, before we make that decision.
Okay.
Because there could be some life extension costs. And before we proceed to make such investment decision, we need to see whether the return makes sense or not. So we will look at that together with the discussions with the client.
Right. Okay. So it is possible that some of these vessels will have to be scrapped, like, if the life extension cost economically unjustifiable. Yeah.
That's a possibility, because some of these are, you know, very close to the 4 to 5 years away from their end of life now.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have got Raymond next from TGSCIMB. Please go ahead, Raymond.
Hi, I just want to check if you can hear me clearly.
I mean, it's slightly like you're looking out of a cave, Raymond. The echo is, I mean, there's a quite a echo or reverb.
Okay, I think you should be able to hear me clear now. All right. Okay, so the first question I have is concerning the FPSO so-called cost provisions. May I know what was the accounting entry that you passed? Did you make a provision to beef up the what kind of accounting entry did you actually pass in the second quarter?
Yeah, given the finance lease receivable, we shouldn't be going too detailed into the accounting treatment, Raymond. But essentially, what happened is that we increase the total project cost, and the way this construction profit calculation works is that we then need to adjust the percentage of completion under the input method, and as a result of this adjustment, the P&L has to take in an additional hit. So, you know, that's how the profits were affected this quarter.
Okay, so you basically reversed the contract profits that were booked in prior quarters?
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay, because the percentage of completion has reduced, so you can't be booking in the same amount of concession profits as you had booked before, since the percentage of completion is now lower based on total cost, which you have bumped up the total capex of the project. May I know what's the revised capex for the project now?
As I said to you, total capex is probably about 9% higher.
9% higher from what base?
From the original estimate.
Could you remind me of the original estimate? Thank you.
Original estimate was maybe about 1.8 to 1.9 B.
1.8 to 1.9 B, alright.
This is talking about all components, huh?
Yeah.
There are various components. There are operating components, there are financing components, There's a few components in the this estimate.
Okay. And what is the revised completion date?
I think last time in the first quarter we said about 3 months delay. I think we are booking in, we have made provisions to reflect, we've rebased our numbers now and provided for an additional 3 months.
Okay, so now it's a 6th delay, yeah?
Correct. In addition to that, we have also put in additional contingency as well, just to be on the safe side, you know, and we believe that at this juncture, touch wood, hopefully there is sufficient provision to prevent against further surprises here.
Okay, so that contingency is part of the 9% increase, is it?
Correct.
Okay, and when is this expected to be sailing away now?
I think
in 2024. It will be operational in 2024, but we can't disclose the exact month for you.
Operational in 2024. So is it sailing away in 2023 or only after 1st January 2024?
Yeah, I mean, it takes some time to get to the site. So I think either, you know, the end of 23 or the beginning of 24.
For the sailing.
But all of that has been taken into account in this 6 months delay that we have provided for, Raymond.
Okay, because I think the original sailing guidance was end 23, start of 24. So your guidance today doesn't seem to be any different.
No. No, I think the original completion date was end of 23.
Ah, okay. Sorry, I mixed up. Okay, yeah. So your original completion date was end of 2023.
Yes.
And now you're saying that the completion date is going to be middle of 2024?
I think so. I think that is, 6 months should be mid-24.
Okay, so mid-24 sail away or mid-24 first oil?
Delivery. Raymond, there will be some gaps, so I don't think we want to focus so much on the sail away.
The sail away is part of the process to deliver.
You know, there are periods in between that you have to do the installation, the commissioning, so those dates will kind of move, so I don't think we want to get into that kind of level of detail.
Okay, so can I then take you back to the original guidance where you said it was going to be so-called, quote-unquote, ready by late 2023, early 2024. That guidance was premised on first oil or sail away?
That's delivery.
Is a technical definition in the agreement that meets certain criteria, so, you know, it's specific to the agreement, but it's not first oil. It's prior to that.
Okay, so somewhere in between sail away and first oil then? Which is that what you mean by delivery?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the OBU on the associate line. It's making a loss in the second quarter. What's that?
Associate share of associate line.
Yeah, I think that's
profit of JV, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Isn't that all the offshore associates? Is there anything else in there that might have caused the loss?
Yeah, I mean, this relates to higher repair cost for one of our assets, no? Under the joint venture.
Higher what?
Higher repair cost.
Repair cost. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, question going on to the petroleum tanker side. Last quarter, you mentioned that the VLCCs were dragging your cost down. So I interpret that I interpret that that your VLCCs in the first quarter actually made a loss due to the exposure in the spot market. Was it still loss-making in the second quarter?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so it's still loss-making in the second quarter then, which probably offset the higher profits on the Aframax side.
Yeah, I think the Afra is back in the black. The midsize is back on track. Is the VLCC that is still in the red. But we have undertaken certain operational strategies to sort of minimize the losses.
Okay, what are those strategies?
I mean, we enter into arrangements with some partners to get a better charter rate. And those charter rates are slightly higher than the current market spot rate.
Okay, well, VLCC rates have done very well since the end of the second quarter. Do you think that you will be able to make a profit on your VLCCs in the third quarter?
Payment Zahid here. I think at the moment it's very difficult to predict, but based on the current outlook, we do expect the second half is going to be better than the first half in terms of the VLCC in terms of rates. But is it going to make money or not? I think it's difficult to predict.
Okay. Could I know what kind of spot exposure do you have on your VL, US, and FS in the second quarter?
One second,
yeah. Let me give you the numbers, Raymond. Since I'm sharing that, I will also share the term to spot ratio for the other classes as well. For VLCC, for second quarter is 70-30 term to spot. Suezmax is 42-58, and Aframax is 69-31. Of course, we also have our DPSC, which is 100% on term.
Okay, so quite a number of Suezmaxes actually came off charter, because last quarter I don't think the Suezmax spot exposure was 58%, it was in the 40s.
Suez has gone down and VLCC has gone down, but Aframax is higher. But as you know, our Aframax fleet is the largest component, so if the weightage will be higher on the Aframax and the DPSC. Don't forget, we have added two more DPSCs during the quarter.
Okay, but when you give the term spot exposure for VLCC and Afra, you exclude the DPSC, right? That's considered a separate category.
The Aframax doesn't include DPSC, it's a separate category. So the DPSC will add to the overall ratio of 72-28. Also.
Right, okay. Yeah, I think the last question, MNET, without the write-back in provision for warranty in the second quarter, would MMET still make a profit?
It will be a slight loss because there was, they needed to absorb the corporate or the overhead. So there was still a loss before all the write-back.
Okay. But the losses are very marginal now. Compared to what we had seen in 2021. Do we expect this sort of run rate to be the case in the second half, so the overall full year result might be marginally loss making or marginally profitable, so somewhere plus minus break even kind of level?
No, we expect to end the year more or less the same as what we're reporting.
More or less the same as the...
Meaning to say that as we're reporting, 20 million ringgit of profit in the first half, we should hope for a double of that at the end of the year.
Okay. All right.
Because remember, we did a lot of kitchen sinking over the past 2 years, right? Because of... as we're trying to close the audit and all that, we took a very prudent stance and we kitchen sink the account. So there could be further write-backs. And also we are pursuing a lot of COVID claims with our client as well. So we are hopeful for some of these recoveries now.
Okay. Yeah. So in terms of the FPSO Mero 3, the 6 month delay, have you agreed this with Petrobras? Is Petrobras imposing any LADs or that kind of penalties?
Yeah, we have informed them, we have written to them, and we are starting the discussion with them. In fact, our head of the offshore unit just came back from Brazil, and the discussion has started, and certainly we will be pursuing all avenues to affect whatever recoveries that we are entitled to.
Okay, sure. All right. Thanks, Azlan. Thanks, Ethan.
Thank you, Raymond.
Thank you. Our next question is from Sean Lim, RHB. Please go ahead.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. I'm going to have a couple of questions. Maybe I'll do one by one. First of all, may I know how many vessels, how many LNG carriers have been impaired in this quarter?
About 10 or so, huh?
About 10. And I suppose all these 10 are related to, all these 10, these vessels are going to expire in the next 3 years, right? and hence the impairment, right?
Yeah, I mean, we need to review those vessels which are up for expiry, but at the same time, we're also taking into account the stricter environmental regulation under the EEXI and the CII, and this has resulted in the dip, in the value.
Okay, I mean, the reason I'm asking is just, I'm just trying to anticipate, moving forward, if there are more vessels closer to, expiry, can we expect a similar quantum of impairment to be made on all these vessels?
I mean, we will continue to review our portfolio of assets, and based on the value assessment, there could be some more. There could be some more. Maybe not as large as we have taken in this time around, but I believe there could be some more impairment, at the year end.
Okay. Okay. My next question is just regarding on the presentation of the data. For your segmental PBT in the slides, right? So all the blue color PBT line has already included the non-recurring item, right? So what I need to calculate the core is to strip off the non-recurring item. Is that so?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And my last, I have two more questions. The third question is, what is the percentage of completion for Mero 3 again?
I mean, based on the accounting, as at the second quarter, is about 48% or so, which is based on the input method.
Okay, so 48% completed. And, I remember in the previous engagement, you guys mentioned about, two force majeure events were being actually written to Petrobras. One is the Russian, Ukraine, and the other one is China lockdown, of which, the China lockdown issue has been acknowledged. What about the Russian Ukraine war discussions? Has it also been approved by Petrobras?
The discussion is still ongoing, Sean.
Okay. Okay. So following, in the next 2 quarters, we shouldn't be expecting any more cost correction, right?
We hope so. We hope so. I mean, we have been very conservative, just like in the case of MHB in the past, where we keep sensing everything. We have been very conservative this round. And I believe that for the remainder of the year, we should start to see profits back again. But again, these are all accounting profits. So I wouldn't be too excited about this now.
Okay, okay. Okay, my last question is, following the Qatar Energy LNG careers win, right? What's your current bid book now, and can we still expect something similar in the gas asset in the next 12 months, or we should expect more contract wins from the offshore?
The opportunities that we're pursuing are in the range of 2 to 3 billion. So we can't give you any details about, you know, our expectation, but you know, when we do, we will win something, we will announce it. So but we are pursuing opportunities for this year and next year.
Okay, because last quarter you also guided 2 to 3 billion, so we have, I mean, there are new tenders being fill up the Qatar, right, I suppose?
Yes, there are new tenders being looked at.
Okay.
LNG shipping market is particularly active at the moment.
Alright, so that means we should expect more, if there is, there should be from the LNG market.
Well, we hope so.
Okay, that's all for me, thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ben Shane Lim from Macquarie Capital Securities. Please go ahead, Ben.
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can.
Okay. Okay, so I had a bit of difficulty with my line, so I hope I'm not repeating any questions, but I want to figure out like how much I should be adjusting for on your offshore segment. So what should we be taking out of this number for this quarter for the provisions? What's one-off, what's off recurring?
I mean, this year we booked in about 30 to 40 million relating to the Mero project. US, huh?
This quarter, yeah. 40 million, 30 to 40 million US.
Yeah, to adjust to adjust for all these things.
That's again, the like your provisions, your revenue reversal, all that. I mean, I heard there's a few categories there. Is this just the lump sum you should think about?
Yeah, we will adjust the total project cost, and the consequential impact of that is this 30 to 40 million hit to the P&L.
Okay. And this is not recurring, or is this going to be recurring, that total project cost impact?
Yeah, the additional total project cost will need to then be amortized based on the percentage of completion, you know?
Okay, so it's going to be clear. Are you going to have a higher cost of about 30 to 40 million every quarter?
Yeah, I guess overall the so-called construction profit for the Mero project will be lower than what we originally thought because of this cost provision. But these are just accounting provisions. The cash flow will come in 2024, and the cash flow will be a 22-year cash flow owner.
I understand that, but I'm trying to put some numbers to it. I'm trying to split it between what is loaded into this quarter and what is going to be recurring over the subsequent quarters. So for this quarter, you're saying 30-40 million is recognized, but in subsequent quarters, what is the additional cost that's going to be recognized, sort of that drag, you know?
Maybe about another 40 million or so, right? 40-50 million, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Based on the percentage of completion, I guess maybe another 40 million or so.
Sorry, this is every subsequent quarter until the project is completed, right?
No. It will be based on the percentage of completion.
Yes. So your project cost has gone up by 9%. You're not recognizing all of it in this quarter, right? So this is spread out over the remaining quarters as you progress the project. And it works out to about 40 million per quarter, right?
No, that's how depending on the progress of the project.
Oh, yeah. Depending on the project, progress of the project, I understand, but I would just simply... Yeah, okay. Okay, but basically the point is there's going to be a recurring drag from this higher cost. It's not just one-off in this quarter.
But the remaining part of the year will be profitable overall. After taking into account all of this, the Mero project will be profitable for the remaining part of the year.
Okay. So this is the cost escalation part. Did I understand correctly, there's also like a revenue reversal component or something in there? Is there anything that's more one-off in this number?
No, the way the accounting works is that because it's the input method, which is based on cost incurred, as the total project cost increase, then we will need to revise the percentage completion down. And then that will then affect the revenue line. And that's actually how the hit to the P&L takes place.
Okay. Okay. And because if I look at like your revenue, let's say your cost incurred, so your offshore construction work in progress, right? It's running about 160, 140, you know, that hasn't changed, right? But you're just you're recognizing a lower revenue.
Yeah, because of these one-off items, we had to adjust the revenue. So we took the hit this quarter.
Yeah, sorry, I apologize because it's a bit confusing. You're saying you take a hit this quarter, but the cost will show up in a recurring basis as you progress the completion. So,
correct, but we have taken the bulk of the adjustment. I mean, the simplest way to think about this is that the cost has gone up by 8 to 9%, and we will need to amortize that cost based on the percentage of completion. That's the simplest way to explain it to you, because even I'm confused with this financial accounting for this construction profit.
Okay. Okay, I'll leave it at that. Okay. My next question is just on heavy engineering segment. What was the sum of the write back?
Yeah, some of it was reversal of warranty claims, provisions for warranty claims, as well as successful acceptance by the client of some of our COVID-19 claims.
Mm-hmm. How much was it?
I think overall, maybe about 30 million ringgit or so.
Okay.
We're talking about year-to-date, huh? Year-to-date, I think it was total around 30 plus million.
So just for this quarter, how much is it?
This quarter, you have the number? 10 million USD, eh? 10 million ringgit this quarter.
Okay. Okay. And then I want to understand your petroleum tanker side. I just want to understand your operational strategy. So it seems like you're locking in a lot of you're locking more FMX rates, you're moving more to time charter. Would you be able to share those that you're locking in time charter, roughly what level of rates you're locking it in? Is it roughly, is it around the spot rate now, or is it, a bit further below the spot rate?
I don't think we can share that kind of level of detail.
Okay. How long are the time charters you're locking in for your FMX then? Those that you're locking in for time charter, is it about a year?
I think they're all varying periods. So yeah, because we have so many FMXs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I can't generalize that, but could be several months to a year or 2 to 3 years even.
Okay. Alright, thanks. That's all.
It's not like, I think it's all taken at the operational level, because they will look at the market that every day that the market is developing. So it's not by, following a specific strategy. They have to assess the market conditions, and based on that particular time that the ships are available for customers, they will take a decision whether it should be a spot, a short-term charter, and so on. So it's less at the commercial to assess at that point.
Okay, I understand. Thanks. That's all the questions from me.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have got Ho Ming from UOBK here. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, I have a lot of questions. I go through one by one. You mentioned earlier there is some repair costs affected your offshore JV and associate line. Like, how much is that amount, and is that one off?
Is that?
Can you repeat that question?
I think that impacted your offshore profit, right? But it's under the JV and associate line. Yeah.
Associate line.
The JV associate is basically one of my terms.
How much is that amount?
You can see that there's this quarter we reported a hit of 10 million, right?
So is that whole 10 million US dollar?
No, it's 10. The share of profit from JV for this quarter was 10 million ringgit loss.
So that 10 million is the whole thing, 10 million ringgit is coming from that repair cost, lah.
No, the repair cost was about 10 to 15 million or so, lah, ringgit. Yeah. Oh, sorry. The repair cost is about 10 million to 15 million USD. One off cost.
USD. Okay. For one of your, is that which project is related to? If you can share.
This is one of our joint ventures in Brazil.
Oh, but not Mero 3, like another one.
This is one of the old assets, now.
I see. Okay. All right. And then for the okay, just to double check again, the when you mentioned the Mero 3, that 30 to 40 million additional cost provision, that is only for second quarter, right? How much was recognized in the earlier quarters for Mero 3, if you can recall, if you can recap that?
In terms of the correction, is it?
Yeah, the correction, yes. And what's the total correction that you have recognized so far, including the 35, including the 30 to 40 million that you mentioned just now? Yeah.
Easily in 90 million correction.
Okay, 90 million. And then you mentioned that there could be another 40 million to be recognized based on percentage of completion. So is it fair to say that this 90 million in total is based on the 48% completion that you recognize now, and then when the project goes closer to 100% completion, you recognize another 40 or another 90? How does that work? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe another 70 or 80 right to the end.
Right, I see. But to put it away, the total, 90 plus another 70 to 80, should reflect in total the 5 to 10% upside from the CAPEX. Original CAPEX,
lah. Yeah.
Okay, and just a double check on the cash flow. I think earlier you mentioned in your slide on the adjusted cash flow operations, right? You say something like that your operating cash flow increased year on year due to the payments you received from a client, but it decreased on a quarter on quarter basis. That reflects the Mero 3 part. So can I understand how much is the cash flow impact from the client payment receivable, and how much is the cash flow impact from the Mero 3?
No, you see, the reason why we are doing this adjustment is because essentially this is a cash flow from investment. The money that we are putting into Mero is not an operating cash flow. It's actually an investing cash flow. So that's why we have adjusted our cash flow from operation to add back the investment that we put into Mero. Right?
Based on your earlier slide
in terms of the other part, under the GKL arbitration, Shell has basically unilaterally offsetted some of the payments, right? So, but now it started to pay back, because they are fully offset based on their award sum. So now they start to pay us,
So how much are you able to share? How much was the amount from Gumusu? Because I think this is a full quarter of the resumption of the payments from Gumusu, right? So how much is that on the cash flow level on the full quarter basis?
I mean, you can do the calculation. You know what is the charter rate per day, right? Gumusu is easily more than 200 million US per year cash flow from operation.
More than, sorry, how much? More than
200 million per year US.
400 million per year US. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's on the bottom line level, lah. For the lease profit, right?
Yeah, this is where the dividend comes from, lah.
Okay. So just back to that question on the, referring to slide 6, yeah, your when you do the adjustment from what you reported in your operating cash flow to your adjusted cash flow calculation, you know, you disclose that the offshore construction work in progress line, right? That is where it is a CapEx line, but you put that as an adjustment to your operating cash flow line. So as of year-to-date payment was $302 million, and in your 2021 disclosure, that payment was $271 million. So total about $573 million of CapEx, I think. Is that all from Meryl Street? Yeah.
No, I mean from the commencement of the project, I think we are more than 800 million plus. 800 to 900 million USD already invested into the marijuana.
So that means so far year to date the CapEx recognized is already under the so-called offshore construction work in progress is already 800 to 900 million already recognized in cash flow.
Correct.
Yeah, and that correlates to the one you mentioned earlier, the 48% completion progress, right?
That's right.
Right, okay. That's very clear now. The core LNG that I think Stephen asked earlier, the core operating profit for LNG, you mentioned it was weaker on a quarter-on-quarter basis because of higher dry docking, right? How many vessels how many dry docking days versus the first quarter 2022? Yeah.
When you say quarter and quarter, you're talking about 2021 to 2022, is that right?
The earlier quarter, in first quarter 2022, your LNG profit was actually very good. Even if you add back the impairments, it is still weaker than the first quarter. You know, and you mentioned earlier, it was the dry docking days was higher. So, we want to get a sense
No, it was about 180 days versus only about 70 days in the last quarter.
Last quarter was 70. The second quarter was 180 days.
180.
Right. Is that for four vessels or something? You know. Yeah.
I think no. I mean, those kind of details are too micro,
I mean. And moving forward, what kind of dry docking days should we see in the second half? Because I'm really surprised because I thought LNG demand should be very high now, especially since Russia has started that crisis in second quarter, right? But yet your LNG profit didn't really reflect because you had dried up more of your vessels. So what's the outlook like for
the because our vessels are all locked into time charters, and we have to follow the schedule dry docking. Otherwise you have other problems.
Okay, and based on your schedule now, should we see more dry docking or lesser dry docking versus the second quarter? Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I don't have the data in front of me. Do we have the option?
No, we don't have that information, Homi. Yeah. I mean, all the vessels have to go for scheduled dry docking every 2.5 years. Of which in 5 years they will go for a major dry docking. So every vessel has its own schedule. We wouldn't be able to share that ahead of time. And sometimes there is moved by a few months up and down based on the client's requirement for the vessel. So it also changes from time to time.
Got it. How about the data? Were they fully utilized in the quarter or were there like a bit more offline days, something like that?
For which one, sorry, again?
The VLEC, the ethane carrier.
Not aware of any off-time off-layer. I think I believe they were all fully utilized for the VLEC.
Okay. So my overall question is with the Russia event happening since the second quarter, right, and everything else, all the geopolitical events and things like that, but it doesn't impact your time charter for the both. For both LNG and VLEC, it's more of the impact of the dry docking hit on your core operating level, right? For the gas segment.
Uh, Yeah, we come back to you with the details, Homing.
Okay, okay. And to double check one more thing, recently in the central market, there are two things. FMX rates in the Asian region has surged up a lot. But I'm not sure how whether this is going to be higher for longer. And also, very recently, the sector rates in the US side went up a lot as well because US crude exports started to push up the rates again. Did you benefit from both sides? Any of your vessels? Yeah.
I'm sorry, Homing. We are actually over the hour, so we have to come to the end of the Q&A session. I will now hand the session back to Azmir for closing comments.
I think just let me Zahid here. I think just to share with our analyst community. I mean, we just apologize to some of you that still have questions that you want to ask that we are not able to cater during this period. So we will certainly try to do better with the arrangement of the question among the analysts going forward. Apologize for that.
Okay, thank you, Jazayat, for the note. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. On behalf of MIT Berhad, we would like to thank you for your participation. The PDF version of our presentation slides will be made available in our corporate website post this earnings call. To the sales side analysts, we would highly appreciate that you forward a copy of your published research report to the MIT Investor Relations team for our reference. Thank you once again, everyone. Stay safe and have a good evening.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect.